In 1933, University of Chicago professor William Dodd somewhat reluctantly took up the post of U.S. ambassador to Germany. He moved to Berlin with his wife, son, and daughter. He hoped for an easy post so he could spend his spare time writing a book. Dodd assumed then Chancellor Adolf Hitler wouldn't actually be in office very long. But over the next few years, the Dodd family witnessed Hitler consolidate his power and impose increasing restrictions on the country's Jewish population. In one of the past year's most notable books, In the Garden of Beasts, author Eric Larson chronicles Dodd's time in Germany, the adventures of his flamboyant daughter Martha, and clashes with both Nazi Party officials and the State Department. Eric Larson will be at Northshire Bookstore in Manchester Center, Vermont on Sunday at 5 o'clock, and it's a great pleasure to welcome him back to our program this morning. Eric Larson, thank you very much for being with us.
Yeah, thank you.
Give us a sense of what this journey has been like for the past year since this book has been out, has made an impact, and people are responding to it.
Oh, well, it's been actually very, very gratifying and, frankly, something of a relief, because I have to say that on the eve of publication, I kind of came out of a trance, and I thought to myself, does the world really need yet another book about the Third Reich? And apparently it does. I mean, I've been very surprised at the degree to which it's been embraced by people, and frankly a little perplexed.
So let's parse it. Why do you think that is the case? What do you think it is, the ingredients that are part of this story that are captivating people?
Well, you know, part of it is I think that this particular stretch of time is a part. And the book focuses really on essentially one year, 1930, from the summer of 1933 through the summer of 1934. And I think I don't want to say this period has been overlooked, because the really serious Hitler scholars like Ian Kershaw and Richard Evans and so forth have spent a fair amount of time on it. But I think, for one thing, it's an unfamiliar period to an American audience. And I go into it with enough detail that I think a lot of the material comes as kind of a surprise. So there's that. But I think there's something else going on. And I think that when people read the book, they see, and I'm talking about people at both ends of the political spectrum, they see or fear a resonance with events today. And that might be powering something.
Were you aware of that resonance prior and something you wanted to explore, or was that something that started to creep up on you and tap you on the shoulder?
You know, that's something that definitely surprised me, and it became apparent to me actually from the start with my very first talk about the book, which took place actually shortly before it was introduced. It was sort of my test case talk. It was a talk in Corvallis, Oregon, and a gentleman took me aside afterwards, and he said, you know, I didn't want to ask you this during the talk because I didn't want to, you know, whatever. But do you see any resonance today? And at the time, I was a little, you know, I told him that, you know, when the book was conceived, I was getting a little bit concerned about, oh, you know, Americans engaged in torture, you know, prisoners at Gitmo, and you know, the firing of U.S. attorneys and things like that. But I told him, I said, you know, it wasn't really what made me write this book. But he was coming at it, as it happens, from a totally different direction. He was of that element at the very, very far right who conflates Obama with Hitler, as if Obama is the reincarnation of Hitler. Astonishing, I know. I'm astonished, but that is I've discovered that that's a real seam of political thought out there.
And it basically gets down to who we perceive the good guy and the bad guy to be.
Oh yeah, and isn't that always the case?
Right. So, what was it about the Dodd story in particular that fascinated you? And because then it seems that Martha must have just been a godsend, right?
Well, yeah, yes, you got that absolutely right. I mean, look, here's what happened. I mean, yeah, what I set out to do. This is kind of a long story, which I'll spare you. But essentially, my curiosity got piqued as to what it would have been like to have been alive and have lived in, to have been in Berlin during that first year or so of Hitler's rule, and to have met all these now, of course, acknowledged icons of evil, but to have met them, maybe even socialized with them, at a time when nobody knew the ending. What would that have been like? So I really set out, the inspiration for this book really was kind of to indulge my own curiosity and try to get a sense of what that time of gathering darkness was. There was sort of a, almost like a creepy appeal to it, if you know what I mean, kind of like the horror story, horror movie sort of thing. And so I deliberately set about trying to find characters, and at some point I stumbled across Dodd, William E. Dodd, his published diary. And soon after that, I came across Martha's published memoir, and I thought, "Whoa, this is very interesting." They both arrived very naive, but in different ways, and both in the course of their first year in Berlin underwent a significant change in attitude, which is really what you look for as a writer. You know, you want to in real life, it's hard to find characters who actually undergo a classic narrative arc like change. But you're quite right. When I came across Martha, that's when I realized that I must have done something right when I was a kid or something, because the fates had just given me a real prize. I mean, the first thing that totally startled me was when I read that she had initially, after they arrived in Berlin, she had initially embraced the whole Nazi thing. She was enthralled by it, So there we had our very first ambassador to Nazi Germany, and his daughter was into the whole thing. How strange was that?
Mm.
But the thing that really clenched me was when I learned that she had had an affair with the first chief of the Gestapo. Then I was just, I was lost.
It is it's quite a story. So when Dodd comes to Germany and with the State Department, and he becomes the first ambassador to Nazi Germany, the idea, the held opinion, commonly held opinion, was that Hitler would not last that long. And
right.
And yet you have many people in the book, like George Messerschmitt, for example, who is warning the FDR administration about the severity of the issue. So why was there that opinion that Hitler would not be able to survive for very long?
Well, when we're talking about gradients of opinion, that was the prevailing opinion. There were others who were quieter, lonelier voices who really understood and got it. One of those early on was, in fact, George Messerschmitt, Dodd's consul general, not to be confused with the German aircraft designer Willy Messerschmitt, by the way. But George Messerschmitt really understood quite early. In fact, earlier in 1933, before Ambassador Dodd even arrived, incredibly, he actually raised, in a confidential dispatch to the State Department, the prospect of preventive war against Hitler. Can you imagine? I mean, it was politically untenable at the time. It could not have happened. But just the idea that this guy, Messerschmitt, was thinking in those terms, I mean, shows that he really understood something that a lot of people didn't. The prevailing opinion, though, was that Hitler could not last. He was too crazy. He was just too unsteady. The government would fall out of power at some point.
President Roosevelt certainly wanted Dodd to address the issue, and there was the understanding that what was being done was shameful, but also that
you're referring to the Jews.
Yes. Of what was happening, but yep. But it certainly seems that it was as if they did not want to do anything officially.
Yeah, well, that was very clear, it seems hard to imagine now with the power of hindsight, but one of the things I really disciplined myself to do was to go back and adopt the points of view of those alive at the time, I think people often tend to, not the American history scholars, of course, but people, lay folk, often intend, I think, to underestimate the pressure that Roosevelt was under back in 1933-34. I mean, his top priority was to get America out of the Depression, and he was opposed by some pretty powerful, politically vociferous forces who were totally into, isolation, and who were deeply opposed, for example, to to allowing Jewish refugees into the country, any kind of excess immigration. So Roosevelt was under a lot of pressure for him to have spoken out and to possibly risk some kind of entanglement or even war, with Germany this early on, might actually have been devastating to his plans to get his New Deal legislation passed. So he was under a real bind. So what he told Dodd, interestingly, when Dodd met him in Washington, he told Dodd on the subject of Jews that he could not do it, we could not do anything officially as a government with regard to Germany's Jews, but certainly Dodd was to look out for the welfare of American Jews in Germany. Mostly what Roosevelt wanted Dodd to do was to serve as a standing model of American values in Berlin, just to essentially to raise the flag, which I think actually Dodd achieved. I mean, I think a lot of historians tend to overlook Dodd and consider him a failed ambassador. But I take a different position. If I had to give him a letter grade, I'd give him a B+, because anybody who winds up being hated by the Nazis must have done something right.
You seem to make the point in the book that you have, in understanding him, you have to understand his background, which is that of an historian.
Yeah. He came to Berlin with certain perceptions of the world and certain beliefs. For example, the idea that on some level, I think Dodd expected rationality, expected to encounter rational statesmen in Berlin, just because that's what he'd read about throughout his academic career and what he'd learned about. People do crazy things, yes, but in the end they are statesmen and they are rational beings. What gradually dawned on him after he arrived in Berlin is that he was up against something brand new and possibly unprecedented in modern history, and that was that these guys were actually organically crazy.
As you spoke to earlier when we were speaking about his daughter, she was in her 20s. And
24.
And she was really swept away by what she thought of as the Nazi Revolution. What was it about that, do you think, that she saw as being romantic?
Well, listen, I think that, again, you have to really try to insert yourself very carefully into the point of view of the era, into her point of view. All right, she's 24 years old. She's sexually very charismatic. She is about to be freed from a dead marriage. Her divorce proceedings are underway, and suddenly she finds herself landed in really, at the time, quite a glamorous, exciting city. She did not see the a lot of the really bad stuff was happening out of view, kind of off camera. And in fact, actually, at the time she arrived, in particular, the violence against Jews had fallen off dramatically. What was happening with regard to the Jews at this point was something much more quiet and subtle and insidious, and that was they were gradually being legislated out of existence, if you will. But again, that was happening sort of off camera. What she saw when she left her house in the morning was, this lovely city, this beautiful park at the center of the city, the Tiergarten. She went dancing, but you get the impression she was dancing every night. She went out a lot to these great clubs in Berlin and to the cafes, which were very glamorous, big cafes, right on the streets. So what's not to enthrall a 24-year-old? And plus, let's take the example of Hitler's SS. At this point, the SS was Hitler's elite guard. They hadn't declared themselves yet as the guys who herded Jews into the gas chambers. These were elite young men, handsome, trim, dressed in startlingly good-looking black uniforms, and that's what she saw. That was her perception. Now you can't. I'm not condoning it. I'm just adopting the point of view of that era. Now, happily, she woke up, but that's what she saw initially.
The name of the book is In the Garden of Beasts. It is by Eric Larson. Eric will be at the Northshire Bookstore in Manchester Center, Vermont on Sunday afternoon at 5 o'clock. You can find out more information by going to northshire.org, northshire.org. Eric Larson, a great pleasure to have you back on the program. Always nice to have you on the show, and it'll be nice having you in town. Thank you very much.
I'm looking forward to it.
Great. Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.